the beginning of channel 2 over. This is channel 2 over. The beginning of channel 2 over. This is channel 2 over. The beginning of channel 2 over. And I skipped this one. I forgot about this one. I did channel 2 right on Monday and Tuesday, the 2nd and 3rd of March. And on 3rd of March, I filled a little half mil tape, all four sides, and skipped this one, and skipped this one. I think I'll use this in the morning on Wednesday, the 4th of March, 1970. I think I'll use this for a while at least on Wednesday morning, the 4th of March, 1970. Willie just about finished the acoustic ceiling in the kitchen on Tuesday today. He has to finish it up in the morning and do a few more odd jobs, and I also have to go to town. Now this is something for you. Now you tell him like you did me last night, say at supper.
Well, I'll tell you what. We had a circle meeting, church circle meeting in town yesterday, and the chairman of the circle meeting had a couple of these beans at everybody's place around there. And we said, what do we do? Are you selling this for the circle? She said, no, it's a gift. And she said she went down somewhere in some small town and she got this. You see, this is artificial ham flavor packet inside. And she said she cooked it and it didn't give her indigestion. She had trouble with eating these beans. And she got another and she had the same fine effects. And so she said to the people, I just think these are wonderful beans. And he said, well, why don't you advertise for me? And she said, I will. So he gave her a whole big, great big box full of beans, and she's trying to give them away. she is giving each one out. So the only thing she said to do, use the beans and take the label to a store, any store, and say, these beans are the best beans I've had. And you don't have to do that, but I'm going to give you these beans, and you tell Sybil to try them. The directions are here. And after you cook them.
Now that is
Grace Stevens.
Grace Stevens.
Yeah, she's a real somebody.
She's already in something.
Yes, sir. And
what is this here? Something to keep them dry?
No, that after you cook them, and 2 minutes before you take them up, you put this in it, and that's all the seasoning. That doesn't have any salt or any grease or anything else in it. And you tell Sybil to try them.
All right.
Now see. Hey, you don't owe me
artificial ham flavor. That's what's getting me, ham and beans.
Yeah.
Now, they're going to taste like ham, huh? Or have you tried them?
Haven't tried them.
Well, now, I'm taking away your groceries here if I do that.
No, I've got plenty more.
Oh, you got a big box?
No.
Well, I appreciate this, but...
Did you ever hear of anything like that?
I never did. I just trying to find out here that, they put up in Indianapolis, Indiana. A lot of crap. Them there's Indianapolis.
Now, she says she can eat them, but you can't eat all those other beans.
Well, I have eating troubles, you know. I really do.
Well, you see, that doesn't have any grease in it. And yet it tastes as if it's got ham in it.
Well, don't you know that there? Is that wonderful? Yeah, if that there... Well, you'd probably have to pay $3 for a bag like this, wouldn't you?
No. Oh, you know, I imagine it just costs what your regular beans cost.
But these are not on the market yet.
I think maybe she's got them started at Publix. Willie, let me tell you something. Now, I heard Guy laughing out there.
Hey, good. Now, you know, I can't be telling you everything we like about. I appreciate the beans and so. But it's just impossible to tell you about everything we like on. But I will tell you this. The man, we was talking about parties. What do you think about the ceiling?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Take a little while to sort it out, but your husband didn't do too bad, did he?
She didn't even notice that you needed a stringer around there.
Oh, you don't want that? I'd just soon take it back and get your money back.
No.
I think it'll have to be.
I'll take it back if you don't want that. That's going to be the hardest job. These people over here, Hoopers, I don't know whether you ever met them or not. I know your husband did. You went over there to check on some cows after the old man died. She was a seller.
I never saw the old man.
No, he's dead whenever she, when you went away. But he, well, I got Cecil a job to lay some blocks, him and the boy that died just there, his back, Benjamin Boy. And, back then, that was back in 53, 4, somewhere along there. And, what really was so funny about the thing, when Cecil come, he kept calling them both of them Mr. and Ms. Cooper, you know. And their names are Hooper. And the name is Hooper. And he heard me and others come around there call them Mr. and Ms. Hooper. And I know he did, but he just, you know, just kept on calling her Ms. Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
And him, Mr. Cooper. So he said something about, you know, his name was Hooper. And Cecil went on, you know, saying, Cooper. And he'd say it kind of funny like, you know, and not like you would say Cooper if the man's name was Cooper. So one morning, Cecil walked up, you know, and he said, "Good morning, Miss Cooper." She said, "Good morning, Mr. Parker D." So Mr. Hooper come out and he says, "How you, Mr. Hooper?" He says, "Good morning, Mr. Parker D." And they called him Mr. Parker D. And so finally he quit calling him Cooper, you know. But they kept calling him Mr. Parker D. So finally he says, "My name is not Parker D. It's Pardee." He said, "My name's not Cooper, it's Hooper."
That's nice. Let me tell you, before you quit.
I got my apron on. I'm going to have to go to work to even put it off. I don't like standing around with it on. It's using it up, wearing it out.
Let me tell you. I got thinking last night about those air slides,
mm-hmm.
sleds,
mm-hmm.
air sleds. Now, you've had more experience with the air sleds than
mm-hmm.
I have.
No. If you've had any at all, that's more than I've had. Hearsay is only.
Just hearsay?
Just hearsay. I've seen them take off. I've seen them. I stood up and watched them running around over flat grassland, you know. I mean, the swamps, the prairies, and stirring up the wildlife and beating up the egg nests and such that. But other than that, I haven't had no touch with them.
Well, now that's what I mean.
How do they do
that? Where you see that?
Oh, most anywhere. We under Orange Lake, Johnson Lake, and various places. Johnson Lake, they skim all over Johnson Lake going to hole to hole, you know, frogging and
yeah.
fishing.
Yeah.
It's just like on Ledwith Lake and on Levy Lake, they use them on Canapi Hall Lake, which they're all big prairies, you know.
Yeah.
Wildlife, what do you call it, kind of a game refuge. You know?
Yeah.
It's a place for them to hide at. But like me and the guy was talking yesterday at lunch, there's no privacy for wildlife anymore, because they used to, you know, be able to go back in these swamps and things, and these marshes and bayheads, and get away from this man's life. You know, anymore they don't, because these old things, they just go right on in there, you know.
Well, can they go over just anything with it?
Well, as long as it's, I think it has to be a little water or the grass heavy enough for it to kind of hold it off the ground. Otherwise, when it goes to dragging, it won't go. It has to be. I don't know a whole lot about them, but I've seen them over yonder at Johnson Lake. I've been out on the lake fishing, and I've seen them go out, and there's more prairie on the east side of Johnson Lake than you can see of open field out here by far more. Oh, I guess it's a mile or so across.
Mm-hmm.
Just nothing but prairie. Water underneath a growth about that thick, you know. Well, they skim over that easy.
Yeah.
But then they come to where the growth is up like this, and I notice they'll jump over that. They'll race the motor up, you know, and a man that's dealt with one of those things, he has to have his eyes open and keep watching, you know, to see if there ain't no snags or stumps or anything, anyway, because that trips them up and hurts them pretty bad. like old your friend H.H. Hare, you know, he run into a barbed wire fence out on Payne's Prairie one time.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, that fence would have killed him, I guess, if he hadn't got... If he had been going faster, we'll say. He'd gone across Payne's Prairie and run into a barbed wire fence. He said he'd been going all out and never did know that strip of fence was there. And
what'd he do?
Caught right across the front of well, I believe he said one, I don't know now, that there's a brace come up here on each side, and that wire was bent just as tight as a bandage string right across in front of his face. He was, you know, sitting on that stool or seat, and he said that wire was just stretched. It broke one or two strands, but one strand held, and said it was stretched right in front of him just like a bandage string. It skinned him up a little bit, but I imagine if that top strand had a broke and one of the lower strands of the hell, it had turned him upside down. He went rolling like this, you know, with the whole machine. But it was, it held up here. That made it bog down, you know, and stopped him. But they've been several different ones that I've heard of that tore the bottom out of the boats, you know, hit snags and things.
Who'd you hear?
Well, this boy over there, I don't know what his name was. He came from over around Island Grove. Was over at Johnson Lake Frog, and he said one afternoon he was skimming along horse prairie or some prairie, and they get out and scout in the afternoons, you know, just before dark, and then and after dark they have with these big powerful lights they hunt these frogs out, you know, and gig them. And he was scouting around the edge of this prairie, you know, and say he run up on a snag or something. I don't remember that exact point. What, maybe a stump or something. Told the bottom out of his boat.
Yeah.
He said, of course, it wasn't, the water was on the shallow where he was at, but he was a long ways from anybody, anywhere, because usually a road don't come up to a prairie. It's a, if it's a lake, there's a, you might have to walk 5 or 6 miles around through the marsh, you know, to get back to your automobile or to hell. But this fella I was telling you about, M. Robinson up here, Gainesville, he's had an accident too. He's got an armor plate on his now. He got one, you know, I say, and brother goes with him a lot fishing. And he has one special built to his specifications. And he has armor underneath the front of it. You know, if it hits anything, it won't tear it up so bad.
Your brother, did they, your brother go with him in that?
That's what they fish with. They caught here back in November, December and January, long about when I was in the hospital, they was catching anywhere from 80, 90, 100 and better, these big redfish out on in the Gulf of Mexico, you know, and that's what they're using that air sled, and to catch them things. And he said, well, the last one time they went out, they caught, they had so many pounds of them until they almost couldn't hardly get up, you know, when they go across these sawgrass ridges and patches, they had to get up a lot of speed, you know, to climb up over them. And he said they loaded down so with fish he couldn't hardly make it. He takes them fish up and scatters them all over them Robinson markets, see, and sells them. They make money at it.
Well, what did they do to the wildlife? It just destroyed it.
Sure, especially if you go in a place where ducks and waterfowl is nesting. Now, I know in most every area where they work, the birds have learned to move. They've learned to build a nest in other places, I imagine. They've moved out, you know, made them move out. Because a bird knows there ain't no need to build another nest, and I know some good, you can tear a nest out, and they'll quit, all except a wren. A wren won't, they're stubborn. They'll come right back and build another nest right back in the same spot. Now, on this tool truck, I watch it, have to watch it constantly, all the time, because in the back, where you open the doors back, the double doors, you know, and where the bumper, around the corner, back that bumper is welded around like that, around the corner of the body. And up under that is a holler, a little recess place, where it's the man that built it left it open, you know, the end. I don't know why he did. It'd been better to close that on up since the rest of it was practically. But he left that little end open, And them bloody things get up in there, you know, and nest in there. And on both sides of them, you have to constantly be pulling them sticks and moss out. Because the thing about it, you know, like we're working here on this job here, and we'd be gone before they hatch out. Or I might take the truck and run into town with it. And of course, it's all right. If I come back and park it back there, the old bird can come back to her babies. But if I don't, if I go to another job, then she's not going to know where I'm at. And so they have to starve. So I did that one time. I kept smelling this odor, you know. Found out the bunker was loaded with birds. And, so then I keep pulling that out all the time. I'm watching because I don't want them to build in there. Ain't no need in the straw.
What other case you know about today? I'm gonna write some letters about that and.
You talking about the air sled?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I don't know of any one that would be, you know, really destructive that I know personally, but I know of, like. Now this boy up here at Gainesville, it's Emil Robinson. Like they go out on Levy Lake out there. He and Martin Brother go out there. And they'll start, possibly in the next few days, bass fishing, you know. And they'll go out there and they'll go from hole to hole, pockets, you know, these prairies, it'll be gators a lot of times started these dens, you know, these holes, and they'll dig out and they'll make a pocket there. Well, they'll slide up to them places and fish them. There'll be bass in there. And then they'll slide over to another one, and while they're sliding, while they're just running over, if it's a nesting area, you know, they're running over where the birds are nesting. There's a lot of various type waterfowl, you know, that do this right above the water. There's a place back in Big Hill where birds roost there, and water come up one time to where, and they build their nest above the highest water level. Water come up where it's going out of the boat, and me and somebody, my brother-in-law or brother one, went in there just to see if we could catch a fish. Just went through this place, and it's a beautiful place. It's a tupelo gum. You know, it's a kind of an evergreen tree, lives mostly in water, marshy land. And this place is just filled with them, and just aisleways, you can just motor through there, you know. And we was going through there, and I looked, just about that high off the water was this sack-like thing built there, you know. I looked over and then it was full of eggs. I say full of eggs. It had looked possibly like maybe a half a dozen, maybe more eggs. And it was the prettiest eggs you ever seen. I don't know what bird laid them. But it was shaped about like that.
Mm-hmm.
And real large for a bird. I imagine it would be some kind of old big crane. But them eggs were speckled, had every color you could think of.
Uh-huh.
Yes, it is the most beautiful thing. And we got pulling around, that's seeing how many of them nests we could find, you know, in various bird nests. And they were just all kind of bird nests up in them trees. So the water had come a flood,
mm-hmm.
and real high water, and the water had backed up in there. And we went in there to see if we could find a place to fish. We got interested in them egg nests, bird nests. You never seen the like of bird nests of all descriptions, kinds.
When they make this real loud noise, these air sleds, is that when they're just moving over the grass?
Yes.
Jumping over?
Well, not all the time. When they're moving in transit, they're making a noise. They make an extra amount of noise whenever they start off. You know, when they got to move that thing, they got to generate a lot of RPM there to make the thing start moving.
Yeah.
And once they get it out where it's smooth sailing, they can throttle down a little bit and keep the same speed.
Mm-hmm.
But like say for instance, say in the marsh or something where they know they've been through there and they done. Now they can make that thing creep just about that fast.
Oh.
They can move it just that fast.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They can work right up to a spot and not even disturb anything, hardly. Just floating that thing along. And that's the way they do. They go through this marsh and they make a road to hunt frogs at night. And then they know, see, there's nothing there to bother them, so they can move along, you know, without worrying, because they follow their road that they made in there. And they can ease that thing along, and now whenever they want to really get over a hump or something or a piece of dry land, I've seen them completely jump over a piece of solid dry ground. They got to rib that thing up, back off out here, you know, they'll go out and back off, and they'll really race it way up, you know, and then they'll jump over it. And that's, they do make a whole lot of racket whenever they jump over one of them.
Tell me another case before you stop. I need to know this. I'm going to work on it a little bit.
Well, I don't really know of any.
I don't mean it.
What, in what form, I mean, you know, what
just like you were saying.
That's about all I know, except.
Like, what was that you were telling yesterday? I got interested in this now, and I forget. What was that? Now, I don't care about the fella, the accident out there. I mean, that's dangerous, and it's
oh, you
sad,
about
but.
Boy, it got his.
Yeah.
Why? One hands cut off, both
oh,
legs,
oh, yes,
several
yes.
fingers.
Oh, yes, yes.
Cut off.
About your fishing holes where you used to pole up into.
Oh, yes. We used to, over here at Orange Lake, cross over here.
Oh.
Used to go into this place, you know, fishing, and catch a lot of fish. And, of course, we didn't dare go in there more than once a week at the most, or every 2 weeks, because it's too much. It'd take, like we were saying, you know, it'd take, they could move a minute in a minute what it'd take us an hour to move in, you know, a distance of space. They could move there in a minute while we would be toiling for an hour. And they just got to where, you know, they just had everything stirred up. We used to go here in the lake and fish these pockets out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's places we didn't bother to fish because it'd be too hard to get there. And that's a breeding ground. That's where fish breed. And I believe that that's the reason you don't catch as many fish as you used to on Orange Lake, because they go to these places, these air sleds, you know, and they just murder them. And they didn't have no problem, the fish didn't. They went to these spots to breed and have the little ones, you know, and they were not disturbed. And now these little airboats, they go anywhere. They just plow through any place, you know, don't make no difference. And whereby we would go, we felt like if we went that far, to that one hole, which we used to say was about 10 acres of clear water, which is a good fishing place. But now anything smaller than that, further out in there, we wouldn't fool with it because it wasn't worthwhile. I mean, you know, it's too hard to pole in there. A lot of times you have to get out on your knees in the bow of the boat and pick up the hyacinths and set them over, you know, to make a road to a different new place. Now, we got to going into this place, what we called it 10 acres and of open water. We went in there, you know, tried to go in there once every week or 2 weeks. And most of the time you could run the motor in spots. And of course we kept the motor going all the time, the kicker.
Mm-hmm.
That keeps you pushed up. And using the pole too. And also one down there part in the bonnet, hyacinths. But them old boys coming out with them air sleds and we quit. Because we couldn't compete with them, you know. They could go in there, they could zip over there, you know, in a minute, and it'd take us an hour of hard sweating to get over there.
Well, you don't fish much then.
I don't fish on Orange Lake anymore anyway. I used to.
Wait.
I used to think, you know, there wasn't nothing like Orange Lake.
Where you fish now?
I've gone back to the Hamel.
Going back where?
Going back to the Hamel for salt water. You can push that up in that hole if you want to.
How about that?
That's fine.
Well, and they were just destroying the fish, weren't they, Willie?
I'd say so.
I can't see. I'm going out here and drink.
I can't see where they'd be doing them any good.
Yeah.
Just hurting their own business.
That's right.
Well, that's worse than I thought it was. That's more than I ever found out, really. And you know what gets me back here on Fish Prairie.
And that's the end. Faye cut it off. I thought I'd go and get a word in myself on the dad brand frog boats that go all night back here. and buzz and let down, and buzz and let down all night long. Half the night. That's the end of this beautiful film. This is Channel 2 Over, 280. 280, Channel 2 Over, and just beautiful. Just beautiful. I could have sat and taped another hour, but Willie said he had on his nail apron, and he had to work. This is 280, Channel 2 Over, and the end of this Wednesday morning, about 8:39, on the airboats, the air sleds, the frog boats. And he started off with Cecil Pardee. I think I'm getting ready for Willie this Friday morning, the 6th of March, 1970. This full breakfast. I think I'm getting ready now. This is 290. I think I'm getting ready. Channel 2 over 290. I think I'm getting ready for Willie this Friday morning. Two or three little points. He's coming to put in the overhead light. Didn't have much to do, and a socket or two. I think I'm getting ready for Willie this Friday morning, the 6th of March, 1970. Channel 2 over, 290.
work on that. Let me see if I can show you what I got here. And then this is the nearest I could find without spending $45.
Woo.
And this is the globe.
Mm-hmm.
It sets up there like that, see?
Yeah. That's a simple kind.
That's a simple kind.
And you can clean them easily.
This is not a complete diffuse, but it's as near as I could get.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Frosty.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, these little lines in here show some light, but they're not like some of them do.
Yeah.
Some of them had patterns of flowers that let a big spot, you know,
mm-hmm.
of unfrosted glass show.
Mm-hmm.
But, do you have any bugs? The nigga says, you got any bugs? I need four. No, Baja, I told him I want a four light bulb. This is a three.
Huh.
Well, that's all right. We use a three then. 360s.
360s.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot,
yeah. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I think I've got
360s. Well, good. If you'll place them somewhere where I can put my hand on them when the time comes. Do you want that light?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Sure, that's fine.
That'd be fine.
$50.
What
Willie?
Did you say, sir?
Yeah,
Willie,
would you move this
you.
Table just a little
yeah.
Hey,
tell you.
He said it.
Let me tell you, before you get started.
Uh-huh.
Tell Fee about that. You see, I try to tell him these things. The boy who's the head of the two-man head.
I can't tell her all that.
Don't tell her all that. Just
no,
tell her
I can't tell her.
Oh, yes,
I haven't got time.
Tell her about that.
No, I can't.
Reading a little bit.
Come
oh,
on,
I can't do it.
You can't. I tried to tell him anything.
No, man. I hadn't got that much time. I got to get back over to Mr. Zetrouse.
Yeah.
But I feel sorry for the boy, actually.
I don't. I think he's jolly.
Yeah, well, maybe we shouldn't.
He just suits me fine.
But anyway, he's about 23, 4 years old, I guess.
He wants to take part.
Oh, yes. He's very active. And he has, he can't read, just to come right down to the brass facts of the thing. He just can't read.
Yeah.
And he's got a job up here at the university. And I thought, you know, I didn't know. I thought really he was a big man, you know.
Yeah.
Big fella. And the way he talks, you know, he'll clear up his throat and he'll rear back like they say, you know, and he'll start and you think by Joe, you know, he owns a university.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And anyway, the other night.
That's very old for you.
Training union over there. You're not familiar with training union, are you?
Yeah,
it's
I know.
A program.
Well, I know. I don't know what it is.
Well, it's a teaching program.
Oh.
Where a training, not a training program. It's supposed to train you to be a better Christian,
oh.
a better worker in the church activities, you know.
Yeah.
And so we have an hour of training every Sunday night before preaching services. And of course we got this literature, you know, and it tells about how other churches, other people, about the missionaries and how they do their work, you know, and how we should follow suit and such. And so, well, anyway, he got up there and was. He'll tell these things that don't compare or contact the topic at all. I mean, there's no tie there.
Mm-hmm.
And his references to his part, unless you didn't know the boy, you just have to get up and walk out because, you know, he clears up his throat and starts off and he'll read 2-3 words and he'll miss one and then he'll stop and won't say anything and you wonder what in the world's wrong and he can't pronounce remember. And somebody, he's waiting for somebody to pronounce it for him, you know. And somebody will pronounce it, and he'll go on. And a little simple word, you know, he'll just stop. And somebody will read a line or two for him, and then he'll catch up and go on. And
they all got the books out there.
Oh, yes, we all got books just alike. Each book is just alike. But it never has been, the program does not promote reading. Are following this. This is just a guideline. We're not supposed to.
Not supposed to read it.
No, we're supposed to take this part and use it as a guideline, something to give you something to talk about. You know, to get up and to help you to refresh your memories as far as your experiences have been. anyway, he had this part, and I don't know if you got what the topic was. Anyway, he says, you know, he says, they says up there at Shan's teaching hospital, he says, they got machines up there that can tell whether your heart's beating or not. I can tell whether my heart's beating without a machine.
Yep.
And everybody, you know, just about, they have to hold a teeth, you know.
Yeah.
And they have to grip their cells to keep from, you know, falling out of the seat at times. It's terrible, you know.
Oh, it's not, will it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's the way a man's supposed to do it.
Yeah, be just tear loose and let it go.
Just be full of yourself.
Well, he is cool. And see, that what I mean, this is about the medical center that does not have any bearing on the part that he's talking about.
Yeah.
He hops off on that, you know, and he goes tipping, tolling, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So here, oh, it's been a good little while back. I said to him, I said, Mike, I said, what kind of work do you do up at the university anyway? He said, well, I said, I'm kind of a, says I'm a superintendent, a foreman like. I said, where do you? He said, well, he says I'm over to. Says I take care of the shrubbery and the flowers over at Shan's teaching hospital. And I said, oh, I said, I guess you got quite a obligation there. He says, yeah. He says I have two other men, and says we work, we keep the hedges trimmed off and the flowers hoed around, you know, and work. And Well, my brother-in-law spoke up, and he said, well, I said, if you had one hard-headed man and the three, crew of three, he said, you would have a job, wouldn't you? And, of course, a lot of them just carry on, you know, and lead him into saying things that normally he wouldn't say.
Mm-hmm.
And I have all ideas that he's got just as much a duty as a foreman or a superintendent of that rose bush as I have.
Yeah.
You know, since I know him, and he... He wants you to feel like, you know, he's a big shot.
Yeah.
He'll fan his coat out like this here, you know, and he'll start off. And, he'll be right up in front of the congregation, you know,
yeah.
talking.
Yeah.
And you think, you know, well, there's a man there that's really going, he's going to
yeah.
put out something here now, and everybody's going to be educated tonight. But
well, the girl, Willie, Shirley.
Oh, yes, this niece of mine.
I want to see her.
She's a very attractive girl, and
she's so
friendly.
Attractive. Hey, she can't help it. She's so attractive.
She's friendly, real friendly, just like a cat. And everybody, you know, that she meets, why, she a little bit of her rubs off on them. And she's just that type of girl.
Mm-hmm.
So Mike was up last year. Originally, he's a native of Fairfield, just down the road from Fairfield.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know, and he's
yeah.
was a member at the time of Fairfield Church down there. Well, he came up to our revival. He and several of the other members of the church, you know, well, Shirley, you know, tried to make them feel at home and invited them back, you know. They were all young men and teenagers, mostly, except him. And so he came there after every night during the revival, and every now and then on Sunday night he'd come up, you know. So then all of a sudden he jumps up and moves his letter up to Flemington. So he comes up there, and then after he moves his letter, about 6-8 weeks after he moves his letter, Shirley gets married. I tell you, it's pitiful, you know. He just goes around there, you know. And she don't even think about it. You know, you can, because I know her. And her time that she spends with him, she's doing it just to make him happy, you know.
Yeah.
Just like she does with me. She'll come up and put arms around me, and she'll talk to me and carry on, you know, and she'll go on. Now, she don't do everybody that way, but now she'll go over there and she'll talk to somebody else, and she just don't say, well, you're better than the other, and I'll stay with you all the time. She
uh-huh.
just spreads herself all over the whole congregation,
uh-huh.
and I like to see people that way.
Is that right?
I really do, and she's a very attractive girl, and just about every boy that's been around, you know, they think right off, you know, that she's trying to make time with them.
Uh-huh.
And she's trying to be just friendly, just a common, friendly girl.
Uh-huh.
And she's has a job up here at the Bell Telephone, and been up there ever since she graduated from high school.
She's wasted up there. She ought to be out here in the country.
She's got a wonderful job that draws a pretty good salary.
Oh.
And she's advanced right off, you know. Uh-huh. She's very smart. I'm not bragging because she's my niece, but she's very smart
uh-huh.
in books.
Uh-huh.
She can glance over something, you know, and give a talk on it. Just you know, just keep on talking. And with no problems.
Oh, really?
And that's something I love in people, you know, that can take, they'll pick up something like this here, you know, and they'll scan down that column there, and they'll get up there and throw the book down, you know, and talk that subject, that topic, right on through till they say amen, they talk that subject. Now, that's the type of people I like. I don't like these people that ramble all over the whole world, you know, and leave the main topic.
Yeah.
We had a preacher like that. This preacher, he was a wonderful speaker, and he, you know, I hate to say it, but a lot of the preachers find themselves with a beautiful voice, and they got to use it. So they get up there and they talk.
Yeah.
And this man, you know, his voice just carried, it just rolled out, you know, just rolled out. And he'd start off and he'd read the scriptures, you know, and he'd hold the Bible up there, you know, and he'd read, and it just rolls out, you know, just like a brook. You can hear his voice all outside, you know, just.
Oh.
It just creeps all through you, you know. And I know you've seen these people can really speak, you know, their voice just rolls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when a lot of times he's reading the Bible, you know, he's got his Bible up and he's looking over the Bible, you know, like this there about it and reading, just reciting it, you know.
Yeah.
And when he puts his Bible down, then he starts off right off the bat. He tells a story. He didn't even think about his scripture when he told it. It didn't connect.
Yeah.
And then he starts off there, and the first thing you know, he's, oh, wake up, he's over in China, he's over in Europe somewhere, he's in the South Pacific, he's, by Joe, a lot of times he'd, in the sermon, he'd tap the North Pole three or four times, that's just going round and round, and done left the Bible, the scripture, he don't never get back to it. And, I don't like that. I like for a fella, when he's got a topic, stick with it. If he's got a story to tell, let it, somehow or other connect. Let it connect a little bit anyway.
Yeah.
It's kind of like
really?
The man said about, he was an animal trainer. He was a person training people to be animal trainers. He was a teacher teaching people to be animal trainers. And he had this, Barnum and Bailey, one of the head men, you know, come to him and said, we need him. Said, our animal trainer left us, and we need a good man for the performance tonight. Says, we just got to have a good man for the performance now. He said, I got two. Said, one's a woman and one's a man. But he said, I believe they're just what you're looking for. Now, this is connecting your stories. So he said, well, he says, I'd like to try them out before I put them out there for the real McCoy. He said, all right, he said, I'll have him to, he said, I'll call him and have him to meet you. So, be to your place of business. So, he calls the lady and the man, and they go down. So, most of those trainers, you know, they have these long knee-length coats, kind of a cape-like, you know, that they wear. So, the lady, she comes in, and the man, about the same time, and so the man in charge of the animals, who has to see that there's a trainer there, a fella to, or somebody to carry them through their paces during the show, you know, he introduces himself and he said, now I have this animal here. I want you to, both of you, I want to try you out on this lion here. It's the worst one we have. And says, I want to see how well you can handle him. So, man said, well, says, since it's a man and a lady, says, it's always ladies first. So the man, the old lion, you know, was roaring. He said, yes, sir. He says, I always believe in ladies first. And so the lady, she walks out into the cage, you know, and does her coat like that, stands up there with arms crossed, and the lion comes up to her and licks her foot, looks around a little bit, kind of sits down on his haunches, you know, and grins around. So the old man said to this other fella that had in application, says, well, You think you can do any better than that? He says, if you'll get that line out of there, I know I can. So I got to go to work.
Wait a minute. Now you can shift. You can shift once more.
I got to go to work though.
Yeah, I know it. It won't take you a minute. See? You know, I was telling you about Willie going to be a veterinary.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
I want to hear about that cow.
No,
that's
man.
Not the little cow, the big one.
No, man.
I just,
we ain't got time to go through all that.
It
takes too much.
It don't take any time to go.
When did you think you was going to be a vet, Willie?
Oh, I thought seriously when I came out of the Army back in 46, I was having so much trouble around there, you know, and very few people used veterinaries back in then. You know what I mean? There was plenty
right.
of them out, but they didn't use them.
That's right.
They used the old family remedies just like they did doctors back then, you know. Mama didn't grab us up and run us to the doctor. She used her old family. She had a medical book somewhere around the house. I guess the old thing's still there. You know, old family remedies.
Yeah.
And we didn't go to the doctor very seldom.
But you still got a copy?
I doubt it. I'll find out. But anyway, Daddy always had this little old midget cow, little old dwarfy thing that
yeah.
never could have a calf. You had to take the calf every time, you know, you had to take the calf. And we thought, you know, that the best thing to do, is just to kill a cow, or, you know, sell her, do something with it. Keep her away from the bull, at least. Because always you had this problem. She got to where she didn't help a bit. You had to follow her around for a couple of days, you know, before it was born, encouraging her to stop and let you check. I got to where it wasn't a great problem, you know. I could take a calf without too much trouble. And then Smith Brothers, they bought Bramer bulls, and they had the old run-of-the-mill, what we always call scrub cattle, you know. And, of course, the Bramer being such a big boned animal, their cows couldn't deliver no calves. I mean, I was over there quite a bit, helping them pull calves, and we just finally got to where, well, Mr. Smith, one of the brothers, I told him, I said, well, you just might want to back the pickup up here and tie this rope around it, you know, and pull the calf. Oh, you can't do that. I said, oh, yes. I said, done it a heap of times, even with a horse. I said, we pulled him out, but I didn't tell you about that, but we used a horse. We had to put the harness on the horse and back the harness up there and hook the traces to the rope, you know, and splash the horse and take off. And with a hot cow tied to the tree. And he says, well, I don't believe you can do that. I said, you ain't going to get this calf otherwise. And he said, you tear the calf up. I said, man, you can't tear that calf up to save you. I said, that calf wasn't built to tear up that easy. So we did. I've tied them to trees and tied them to two different trucks. One head to one truck and a calf to another truck and take off. And I had to cut them off in pieces to get them out, you know. They'd be so big. But I sure was glad whenever they finally developed a cow that could take care of those big calves.
Well, now, that particular case where your sister was out there.
Oh, yeah, you couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. That
now
was my sister-in-law.
Sister-in-law, yes.
The calf. The old cow was in misery, you know. You can't do it. She said, how would you like for somebody to pull one out of you like that? I said, well, he ain't going to not be there.
Yeah, but you had that big Bremer cow you had.
Yeah, see, and the calf, when we got it out, of course, the calf was dead. But she got very upset and wanted to fight about that thing there, about them. You know, she thought it was very cruel. Well, it was, but it's the only thing.
Yeah.
And then they come along with this, the vets now have a jack that they put this thing, you've seen it, I know.
No.
Well, they, about 1950, they built a jack that you could, this thing fits around the hips of the cow, you know, and you just tie this part folds in and you hook this thing to the calf and you just jack it, you know, and it just jacks the calf right out without, you know, the jack is pressing against the calf and more than likely would be help to keep from pulling the calf. So,
mm-hmm.
it'd be putting pressure against her, which would keep from hurting her so bad. But they got a jack.
Is that about the time you decided you were going to be a vet?
And then I decided I wouldn't after I had this experience with Daddy's mule. Daddy was still living time. He had an old farm mule that was a family relic, you know. And of course, it got sanded. And the old man down on Edwards' farm, who had a lot of experience in animal doctoring, and so went down there and was telling him about how the mule acted. And he said, well, the mule was sanded. So he gave me a hypodermic needle and this little old vial of medicine. And he told me how much, you know, to give. And then he told me, he said, if the mule acts this way or that way or the other way, I don't remember now what the actions would be or what the reactions would be from the medicine. I was to give him another shot or not to give him another shot.
Yeah.
So I gave him another shot. 15 minutes, the old mule dead as a hammer. So I decided then I wasn't going to be no veterinarian. But you know that, went down there and told the old man about it.
The plug isn't in right from 654 to 666. The plug isn't in right. The microphone isn't connected right from 654 to 666. From 654 to 666. It's not right 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 from 6654 to 666.
His son-in-law. He's calling to worry me, but they're not. But anyway, he's gonna close shop next week and gonna come out and help me put up a fence.
Hi.
And next week is the last time that he'll have until next fall to get off. He works up there. He helps collect your tax.
Oh.
He works at a tax collector's office in Gainesville. And he's going to be off.
Oh, next week? Yes.
He's going to take off a week to put my fence up. And he knows as much about putting up fences as his boss does.
Well, what good is he going to do?
I don't know. He'll drive the tractor. Now, he loves to drive the tractor. He'll get out there and play with that tractor. You can't whip it when it comes to riding the tractor. Now, I didn't say drive it. I said ride it.
Well, look, Willie, if you're going to put up a fence, that much fence, you might as well get one of them postal diggers. I mean...
You got one?
Tractor diggers.
You got one?
No, but I'd love to have one.
How much you give me for one?
It's off at until 6:98. It's making noises until 6:98. 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 Oh, it keeps on. It keeps on. Now, let me see. There's a little bit. He's talking about that tractor now. He's talking about the harrow. The harrow. Those loose, the boxing on the harrow will cut that axle. And that goes to 734. The noise goes to 734. And he's talking about those on the harrow, those loose boxes on Cookie's harrow that we unloaded on Tuesday. And he looked at it, and he'd had experience. That's what he's saying. And when I went in town, I told Cookie about that. And Cookie said the man had told him that if he had any trouble with it, he'd put a new axle in and make it right. And this goes to 734. 734. Just 734. This goes to 734. It's my connection was bad. To 734. 734. To 734. And Cookie said he had the parts and he was going to tighten it, and if it didn't tighten, then his friend up at the Santa Fe Tractor Company would put in a new axle for him. And I told Cookie we could try it this weekend, or this first go-round, see if it worked, and then take it back up there and let him rework it. And Willie said they had the tools up there, you see, to grind it and make it right. And we couldn't do that. They have the material to work with, and up to 634. Up to 634. Up to 634. Now let's see.
Axle and two.
Yeah.
That axle about that square on that bush and bog. And it had that thing cut down in there almost to where that disc had been spinning. It looked like one goes against the other. Biggest
yeah.
thing I've seen.
You had experience.
You ain't joking, and that, you better tighten that thing up before you use it if you don't.
You,
yeah. Well, I tell you, if I'd have bought it as mine, I'd tear it all to pieces. I'd tear it and find out how good it is, and then I'd carry it up and sell it and weld it back to square. See, they can build it up and dress it down, just like a factory job. Right, see what I can find.